The last topic that I want to discuss, another topic here in South America, and that is a topic, we're not going to be able to get through it, but to at least speak a little bit about it, and that is a topic of Zeh Neneh v'Zeh Lo Chaser, very famous topic. It came up earlier in the year. I think I said I would try to get back to it. Probably said that about a few other topics, too. I can only say in my defense that, you know, each time I say it, I mean it. I'm not sure if that's in my defense or not, but...
Every husband says that to a wife.
But, yeah. But either way, so this one I thought we would, at least speak about some of the Rashi Prakin. Okay. So the background is the Mishnah on Daf Yud Tesamid Beis. Mishnah says, this is a Mishnah that we've seen already when we talked about Shane. The Mishnah says, on Yud Tesamid Beis, Ketzad HaShein, Mu'edes Lechol Esaroyla. HaBehema Mu'edes Lechol Peros, Vahirakos. What is Shane? Shane is a case where the animal eats something which is fit to be eaten. Right, something which is not mishuna, in other words. So there's an expectation, and this is, part, this is not bizarre behavior. This is, proper, routine behavior. So if the animal eats something that it benefits from, that it enjoys, that's called shame. Okay. And for example, peros yirakos, the animal eats fruits or vegetables in the field. But achlak sisokelim, if the animal chews on, either an object or clothing, so that's not typically food. So then the Mishnah says mishalem chatzi nezek. Then that's not, shein. That's probably keren, mishuna, and therefore there's a chi of chatzi nezek. Then the Mishnah continues b'medvar mamurim. When is this true? That what? That a shein mu'edes lechol esaroyla is obligated to pay. That's birshus hanizak. Of a birshus harabim, this halacha that we've discussed already. In birshus harabim, shein, like regel, shein and regel are both pturim birshus harabim. Okay. And then the Mishnah concludes, and this is where we come into our topic of the night. The imnen is, if on the other hand, the animal enjoys or benefits what it eats, even in Rosh Hasharabim, mishalemes mashenenis, then it will be obligated, the owner will be obligated to pay the amount or the value that the animal enjoyed. We just said that you're patur for Shein Varego Rosh Hasharabim. So now we're turning around and saying that if you enjoy it, then you're a chayev. So what is that? Previously we said that we're talking about a situation. The chiyuv of mazik, of shein, is in a situation where the animal enjoys, meaning that it is eating something that is fit for that animal. So what are we talking about? The answer is it's a difference between mishalemes mashe hizika and mishalemes mashe nanis. There can be a difference between the amount that is destroyed, in other words, the perspective of the nizak, as opposed to the benefit that is derived right from the perspective of the mazik. And we'll see that this can get quite complicated as we'll go forward. Then the Mishnah elaborates a little more. Ketzad, what's mishalemes mashenenis? Ochle mitoch harachava mishalemes mashenenis. If the animal eats in Rosh Hasharabim, so from the plaza, from the square, that's a definite Rosh Hasharabim, and therefore there's no chi of nezek, but there is a chi of mishalem mashenenis. On the other hand, mitzide harachava, which is not yet Rosh Hasharabim, so there you'd be chayv nezek, mishalemes mashizika. Mipesach hachanus, mishalemes mashenenis. The border or the door, the opening rather to the chanus, which is still in Rosh Hasharabim, so that's mishalemes mashenenis, right? Mitoch hachanus, if the animal eats inside, from inside the store, then it's mishalemes mashizika. Okay. So basically we have this very interesting halacha in the Mishnah, and that is that even though Shein and Regel are Pturim, Birshus HaRabim, right, there is, right, a wrinkle, an important wrinkle. And that is the din of Mishalemes Ma Shenemes. So the question already could be raised, and this is a very critical question for this particular issue, but in my opinion, it is potentially a paradigm or a model for the much broader concept that we'll be exposed to in just a minute, and that is, how do you understand this, this second level obligation, you know, in this particular case, that you're potter mima shezika and you're chayev from ma shenenis, right? And on the surface, there are really two, I guess, opposite ways to really understand this halakha. One way is to suggest that they basically, what's being introduced in the Mishnah, has nothing whatsoever to do with Nezek. And from a certain point of view, you know, the Rambam, you know, may codify this halakha, which he does, in Hilchos Niske Mamon, but I guess you could make a conceptual case, I'll explain what I mean, that maybe he shouldn't have put it here, he should have put it somewhere else. Okay. By which I mean, I'll explain, that maybe the obligation of Mishalemes, Mashanenis, is not in any way a rehabilitation or a refinement or revision on the p'tur of Shein and Regel B'Shus HaRabim. Shein and Regel, from a Mazik point of view, are Pata Legamri B'Shus HaRabim. However, there's another halacha that's happening here at the same time, and that is a universe, perhaps a universal halacha, and that is the idea of Mishalemes Mashanenis, meaning what we sometimes call the principle of Mishtarshi or Mamoni Gabach, which is actually a little bit different from each other, but maybe not. Mamoni Gabach is easy to explain. Mamoni Gabach means you have my money, and therefore you should be paying me. Right? Let's say I lend you $100, so you have to pay me back. On the one hand, Priyas Baal Kol Mitzvah, but beyond that, Mamoni Gabach, right? You owe me the money. If my object is with you, certainly you have to give it back, because my object is in your possession. You can't hold on to my object, right? In the case of Milva, it's a little trickier, because Milva the Hotzanitna, it's not the same money, it's not a Be'en. But maybe the idea here is that, well, that's one of the things we have to test, see if this is true. Does the halacha think that whenever Reuven is responsible for the enrichment of Shimon, right, that Shimon, you know, has to repay Reuven? Or no. Maybe that isn't true. Maybe only when there's a contractual, you know, obligation. There's no din that if I mahane you, like if you, derive benefit, you know, because of me, that I owe you anything, right? So that's the question. So what I'm trying to suggest is there are two ways to understand this din in the Mishnah. The first way is, if you say what I'm saying right now, which is it's a kind of, you know, mamoni gabach, meaning I am responsible for you, you know, having benefited or been enriched. And therefore you have the right to send me the bill for that. Okay? So the case happens to be one, you know, which is connected to Niske Mamon, right? But that's only a coincidence if you take it that way. Meaning, there's a p'tur of Shein V'Regel B'Shus HaRabim, which is an absolute across-the-board p'tur, right? There's no second-guessing any of that. And therefore, from a Niske Mamon point of view, if there's Shein V'Regel B'Shus HaRabim, there's nothing to talk about. But if the animal benefits, meaning you don't have to give Spot supper now because he already ate, right? So that has nothing to do with Niske Mamon, right? From a Niske Mamon point of view, there's no chiyuv. What kind of chiyuv is that? I don't know. Hilchos chiya. I would put it in hilchos chiyuv matana maybe. If Shimon is responsible for Reuven, you know, being enriched, then Shimon is entitled, right, to some compensation for that. The context, which is that it's mazik, if it's an unactionable mazik, right, then that's just the hechatimsi. Had it been an actionable mazik, there probably would have been a larger check in the mail, right? But that would be a check that belongs to the world of Hilchos Niske Mamon. And this check has nothing to do with Niske Mamon. If this is the case, then we should be looking not just in Niskei Mamon, not just where under other circumstances there would have been a higher or another chiyuv. This would apply perhaps in other areas of halacha too. Whenever Shimon is responsible for enriching Reuven, Reuven is obligated to Shimon, you know, to pay. Again, the parameters of this, how much does he pay, how do you measure hana, that, you know, we haven't yet, you know, discussed. But that's one possibility. But the other possibility, clearly, is that what I'm saying is wrong. And really, this is a din in Nichos Nizkei Mamon. Meaning that maybe when the Torah said that Shein and Regel are Potter Mishus HaRabim, right, there was a kind of a backup. And that is, that's true, Legabe Masha Hizik, but Legabe Masha Nene, there's a Chiyuv. Just a simple question, for example. The dinim of Nezek, right, all require, at least when it comes to paying karka, that you pay me meitav haaretz. Okay, that's in the psukim in Parshas Mishpatim, and that's in the first Mishnah already in Bava Kamma, right? Atzad Hashav Shabahen, if you remember, right, that, you know, this and that, and kulam mishalmim, right, and they all get have to be paid. Mimeitav haaretz. And later on, the Gemara has a whole discussion: what is meitav, and so on. When the Gemara introduces a wider list of mazikim, Rab Chi and Rab Oshia, 24, 13, beyond the four. So the Gemara says, well, one of the things, whether it's the 13 or the 24. One of the common denominator of all mazikim is that they're mechayiv meitav. So I'm just asking the question: is there a chiyuv meitav when you're mishalim mashanenis, when you're potter from shein beregel b'shus harabim? It's an interesting question. Okay. Either way, the question that I'm posing, namely, whether or not this mishalim mashanenis isn't just a more moderate chiyuv of nezek, of course. Raises an interesting question about the p'tur of Shein V'Regel in Rishus HaRabim itself. This is something that we did discuss, right? If you recall, earlier in Gimel, or Gimel and Beis, we talked about the p'tur of Shein V'Regel, the Gemara Daf Hei, which when we saw all those Shaka V'Taryas, again, what are the Hilchoseim of Shein and Regel, or the Hilchoseim of Shein and Regel, is the Petur B'Shus HaRabim. Just, you know, just to summarize very briefly, even though it's much more complicated than that, you could identify easily three Shitos in the Rishon. Why is that? Shein and Regel are Potter B'Shus HaRabim. The Rif and the Rambam both seem to suggest that it's some sort of a Svara. Right? Since Derech, since it's you know, typical that people take their animals, you know, strolling through Rishus HaRabim, so it's a svara that it's a p'tur. If you recall, the Rush in the right in the beginning of the Masechta, the Rush takes on this riff. The Rush says, "I don't understand. What do you mean a svara? It's a gzeres hakasuv, because the Torah says ubier b'steacher, meaning the animal comes into the Rishus of the Nizak and damages, you know, his property, you know, from within. The implication is that if the was a beer b'steyacher, it was, you know, in a neutral territory, which is a rabbim, that would be potter. So it's not a svara, it's a gzeres hakasuv. Unless, says the Rush, that the gzeres hakasuv is teaching you, you know, that we accept this svara. But then the Rush goes on to suggest what the svara is. What's a svara? So here's where I think the Rush is projecting a little bit. The Rush says the svara is, it's true, it's a what I call a policy svara. Meaning, to obligate someone, right, for the damage that his animal does, Birshus HaRabim, given that people typically, you know, walk with their animals, Birshus HaRabim, and others expect that they will, is too draconian. It's just not something that anybody, it's a gzeira, you know, she'ein ha'olam yicholim lamod bo. Because what are you going to do? Every second when you're walking with your tiger or your elephant, down, what is 188th Street here? You're going to have to every second be so nervous and careful. You can't have a carefree moment. Right? So therefore, the Torah was very, it's a didaraisa, not a siyag rabbanan. It's a didaraisa. So the didaraisa, the Torah said, listen, misvara, we're not going to impose that. Okay. Personally, I don't think I took the riff of the Rambam out of mind. I mentioned this when we discussed it. I think that they mean something more fundamental. And that is that if the expectation is that people walk with their animals, brishas haramim, right, and that's their right, and it's also an expectation by other parties, so then we don't consider that mazik, meaning the things that happen in a very natural way, in consequence of that, namely, shame and regel, the animal doesn't kick, the animal doesn't attack, the animal's just walking, but the animal is clumsy or the animal's heavy, and the animal's not discerning, so the animal puts its foot down and destroys, an object. Right? Or the animal is an animal, so the animal sees food, sitting in the street. The animal's gonna take some food. Right? So instead of saying that that's mazik, but it's potur, that's not what the Torah had in mind. What the Torah meant was, this is the animal in Rosh Hashanah. The animal's allowed to be Rosh Hashanah. And then mimela, when an animal is Rosh Hashanah, there are certain things that you can expect might happen. That's not called mazik. It is mafsid, but it's not mazik. But you're not chayev for being mafsid. You're chayev for being mazik. And this isn't mazik. Okay? So that's, I think, what the Rif and the Rambam really had in mind, and I think are important enough, Kamina, but that's not for now. The bigger point I want to make is as follows. So when you think about it, so the Mishnah says, the Mishnah repeats the Ptur of Rosh Hashanah, or this is the Mishnah that mentions the Ptur of Rosh Hashanah in Shane. And then the Mishnah says, however, if the animal benefits or enjoys the food, right, then even though it's Rosh Hashanah, Mishalemes Mashanemes. So again, my second way of looking at all of this is really, this is a form of hezek. You're not chayev for mazik, mishalim hashem, mazik, but maybe you are chayev for the hefsah that you cause up to the level or up to the amount of the hana. Because it doesn't seem fair, right? On the one hand, it doesn't seem fair to charge you, for full nezek, for whatever reason. Although it matters, we'll get to it in a second. On the other hand, it doesn't seem fair that you don't have to give spot supper, right? Because he had a full meal in Rosh Hashanah at the expense of the food's owner, right? That doesn't seem fair that guy should lose when you benefit. So especially if we say that the Ptur Rosh Hashanah is a Gzeres HaKasuv and it just is. Or that there's no Maisa Hezek, and you need a Maisa Hezek, then maybe the idea of Mishalemes Mashanenis is a different category. And maybe it doesn't really belong in this Niskei Mamon. Niskei Mamon is the Hecha Timtzi. It's the background here, nothing more. But the more we think that, on some level, it's not unreasonable to think that if my animal inflicts damages on you, even if it isn't a maisa hezek, maybe you're chai from opposite too, right? Or maybe that's something, whatever it is, if it's only a policy, it's just not fair. Every second he's going to have to watch. But it is fair for him to pay up to the amount that he benefited. After all, his animal did, in the end of the day, cause a loss to his neighbor. So his animal caused a loss to his neighbor, and he benefited from it, and everybody just goes home. That doesn't seem right. So even from a nezek point of view, the shiur that you would be chayiv, which kind of is true to, both the policy or the gzeres hakasuv, whatever it is, and the other side is a compromise in ochos mazik mishalemes mashanenes. But then this particular mishalemes mashanenes isn't necessarily, it's something very specific to Nochas Niskei Mamon. Now again, the Rambam puts it in Nochas Niskei Mamon. That could either be for the reason that I'm discussing, or it could be because for more pragmatic reasons, namely, he wants you to know that in this case you're going to be Potter Mimazik, But there is also another chiyuv, namely the chiyuv of hana. It doesn't mean the chiyuv hana is a mazik type of chiyuv. Yeah.
It's just when it comes to Karen, obviously, there's the chiyuv of, you know, Mushalim and Chatzim, and it's phrased as such.
Yeah.
And the Mishnah to phrase it as potter, yet we're trying to rephrase the Mashanenis as a quasi.
Well, Mashanenis doesn't apply to Karen, only applies to chain.
No, but I'm saying, but the word potter really suggests that it's, that it is a new, there's no halacha, not a.
Why? Because, are you saying, if the other Pturim have a Pturim, well, okay, but the other Pturim aren't necessarily Misvara, this might be Misvara. So I'm not sure if that's that. Again, this is a question. Are all the Hokoseim the same? This is, again, a question that goes back to the beginning of the year, meaning the Chidush HaGriz felt that, you know, all the Hokoseim are Gzeres HaKasuvs, and they're all equally Gzeres HaKasuvs, and that's why, for example, in hybrids, there should be no Gzeres HaKasuvs. But the more you think that some are svaras and some are gzeres hakasos, I think the possibility, again, you don't find this halacha elsewhere either. So I'm not so sure about that. Okay. So this is a question at least to ask, to raise. Now, of course, if we take the second view, the view that this is a kind of revised or moderate form of nezek, meaning it's a limitation on the Pturim Rishus HaRabim. So, you know, as I say, this on the surface seems, you know, completely disconnected from any other obligation of Hana. Right? But you wonder whether it isn't, in some respects, at least a paradigm, if there are other Chiyuvei Hana. In other words, the same question I'm asking about this context, this Mishnah, this Din, right, you could ask if there are other cases where you're chayiv to pay hana specifically, even when there's no contractual obligation. Now, there's no quid pro quo. There's no, you know, agreement between the parties to pay for, you know, services rendered or tashmishim, etc. You could wonder whether or not, you know, this second perspective that I'm trying to develop here isn't perhaps a paradigm, you know, for other such cases. Okay? So we'll get back to that. But I'll give a quick example. It's something that came up actually a couple weeks ago anyways, although it stirred some controversy, as I recall, at the time. And that is the din of Misasek B'chalav Barayos, you know, Chayev Shekeinena. We talked about Misasek, we were talking about Adam Amasek. But let's discuss that halacha for just a minute. Again, I think it stands in the same, you know, parallel position as what we're discussing here. So we know this din, and that is that if a person is misasek, generally in Kol Torah Kula, the person is patur. Again, how that squares with the Chashabbos, I don't want to get into right now. But that's the din, that misasek is generally considered to be a patur. However, the two exceptions to that are chalavim and arayas. Hamasasik b'chalavim arayas are chayiv shekein nin. But I think what I mentioned then was that there's a big debate among the Rishonim how to understand that exception. What is the nature of that exception? So, for example, there's a Tosus in Sanhedrin and Daf Samach Gimel where Tosus discusses the following question. Let's say you have a Masase case, but the Masasek is in Hilchos Shabbos, where normally you would be Potur, maybe even particularly Potur, but it's a case where the action that you do is one in which you are Nene, whatever the case is. Okay, so you're Nene from this Malach that you do in Shabbos, B'derech Masasek. So there are 2 days in Tosos, whether or not that's considered the equivalent of Masasek B'chalav Marayas Shekein Nene, or not. Meaning, the question is, when we say Shekeinena, in the case of Chalav Marayos, what do we really mean? Do we mean to say that Hana per se is what's important in these cases? Right? So it doesn't matter that it's Chalav Marayos or Hilchos Shabbos if there happens to be Hana. What's singular about Chalav Marayos is that there's always Hana. But Lu Yitzuryu had Hana in some other case, or if he had a Chalav Barayas case where there was no Hana, right? Then that would be, well, let's take the second case out of the equation for a moment. That would be the same thing. So that's one day in Tosfos, that if you're nene from a malacha that you do in Hilchos Shabbos, even b'derech mesasek, that you will be chay. What's the other view? The other view says that the shekenene and mesasek b'chalav marayos is not coincidental, it is something very specific and intrinsic, right, to chalav marayos. Meaning, there are two ways to understand why mesasek b'chalav marayos chayiv shekenen. One way is that mesasek is a problem of linking the maisa avera to the gavra. Right? Because what he does inadvertently. Like he's preoccupied. He's trying to do A, he ends up doing B. So we say the B that took place is like a maisa de mimela. It happened, it took place, but he didn't do it. I'm not saying physically he didn't do it, I'm talking about legally. Halachically, we don't consider it his action. He's not engaged enough, he's not specifically enough connected and linked to it. However, this is the pshat, if it's chalav varayos, shekein nene, right? So there's no denying objectively. Objectively, that links him to the action. Because he's the one who's enjoying it. What are you going to say? This happened, he didn't do it. Right? He doesn't have to eat now because he ate chalavin. And he, you know, had a pleasurable experience, let's say, in the case of Arayos. So in the end of the day, the nene is a mitzarif. It's what links or brought, it takes a circumstance which is flawed or lacking in terms of being an action, a legal action, and it redefines it by virtue of the objective impact, since you get the impact of this action, that links it to you. Now, if that's the case, then it doesn't matter, as long as it's hanos, aguf, it doesn't matter whether it's chalav barayos, or Shabbos, or kelayim, it doesn't make a difference. Any hanos aguf is going to link you to mesasek. However, there's another view in the Rishonim, and that's the second day of Tosfos, and the Achronim elaborate this much more. The second view in Tosfos says, no, Hanah on Shabbos is not comparable to Chalav Marayas. What's the idea? The idea is that maybe when it comes to Chalav Marayas, the Maisa Avera is not the Mechalav. Being Nene Min Arayas and being Nene Mea Chalavim Me Machalas Asuros, even if it isn't technically Achila, also, I'm not talking about, you know, Achila Shaloka Darka necessarily, that could be worse, but the point is, even if Al Pidin, legally, we don't consider this an Achila, it doesn't matter. Not that we link it to you because of the Hanah, but we're Mechayev you, despite the lack of Maisa Achila, for Hanah Min Arayos, or Hanah Min Machos. Now, again, that is Mechudash in one respect, and that is you have to prove, or you have to be convinced, that when it comes to those areas of Halacha, that being nena per se is kovek. Okay. Why do I say so? That is exactly parallel, ironically, or I think not. I think it's a phenomenological paradigm, I would call it. And that to exactly what we're talking about. Meaning, in our sugya, we're talking about a situation of somebody who, from a hezek point of view, is patur, but is chayev from a hana point of view anyway. And what we're asking is the hana something which rehabilitates or links him, right, to the original framework, which in this case is nezek. In that case, it's the maisa notwithstanding the mesasek of chalav marayos. The nene isn't, you're not paying for the hana. The hana, right, is basically a mechanism that is linking you to some other mechayev, right? A lesser measure of mazik in our Mishnah, right? And a maisa of achila or maisa bia in the other case. And we'll see more cases in a minute. That's one possibility. And then the other possibility is, no, that's not what's happening at all. Meaning, this Asik says there's no Maisa Avera. And the Ptur Vishus Arabim says there's no basis to be Chayiv Mazik in Vishus Arabim. However, We find that Hana is in Torah, again, it's only a parallel, because in one case we're talking about Averos, and the other cases we're talking about Tashlumin. You can be Mechalik between those Tchumim and Halacha. But what I'm trying to say is we treat Hana as an independent commodity, if you will, something which can generate Isurim, maybe, and can generate monetary obligations as well. So we say, oh, there's no more Mazik, or there's no Ma'is Aveira, but Hana stands in its own right. Okay. So this is going to be the... This is a very, really very big question, not just in our sugya here, of Rishus HaRabim, but in a much broader discussion. So let's go to the Gemara here on Chaf Amud Aleph for a minute. Just to show you that how you define Mashanen is a tricky question. This I'm just going to touch on for a minute because we just don't have the time, although it's a fascinating, very difficult to pin down, but a very fascinating issue and question. I'll explain in a second. That's the Gemara here on Chaf Amud Aleph. Towards the, if you see the big line, the wide lines, four lines down to the wide lines. Right? Commenting on the Mishnah, Vimnenis Mishalemes Vechule. Yeah? Okay. So the Gemara says as follows. Vekama, how much do you pay? Right? Well, the Gemara in the Mishnah says, Mishalemes Mashanenis. Okay? Well, how do you know? What is that? So here, again, it's much more complicated than it seems, but it sounds like there are two options. Rabba Amar Dmei Amir. And Rabba Amar Dmei Saurim Bizal. Okay, now there are a myriad of explanations of this Gemara. Let's stick with Rashi just for the moment, because we're only going to spend a minute on it. Rashi says that the case is a case, if you look at Rashi, where the animal ate Dmei Saurim. Okay, look at Rashi. Dmei Saurim Bizal. No, I'm sorry, Dmei Amir. Shim Achla Saurim Kedei Sviasa Eina Mishalim Eladamim Shayatzarech Litein Bekashin Abateven La'alicha La'achila. The Amala Yefshi La'achila Saurim Elakashin Beteven. So Rashi says that the case on the Gemara, not everybody agrees with this. Most Rishonim, I mean, Rashi is very influential. And, you know, it's very hard Gemara. So post-Rashi, most people agree with this interpretation, but not all. Certainly for the Rambam, it doesn't seem like this is what's happening, as the Shilta Giborim and others point out. So let's take it for Rashi for the moment. And that is, the animal ate Dmei Saorim. And Dmei Saorim are more expensive than Tevin. Tevin is just straw. And Saorim is barley. Okay? Barley is animal food, by the way. How do we know that? Korban Omer, right? What about chitin? We'll say you fed the animal chitin. The answer is the next couple lines in the Gemara. Gemara says chitin is bad for animals. Chitin is, of course, shteyalech, korban shteyalech. Right? Anyways, so we'll see in a minute. So this is what happened. The animal ate saorim. So Rabba says you still only pay Dmei Tevin, which is cheaper. And Rabba says you pay Dmei Saorim, but you pay Dmei Saorim Bezol. That's already a fascinating issue. Meaning, if you are asking, like, what did the animal benefit from, the answer is Dmei Saorim. Right? If you're asking, you know, what is the minimum, right, that the owner of the animal, you know, saved, you know, then you can make a case for Dmei Tevin. Right? So which is it? Is it what the owner saved? Or is it what the owner of the animal saved, or is it what the owner of the food lost? Right? It's a little more complicated even, because Rashi implies, and some people say it, that there is benefit for the animal. In other words, there are people who insist on giving their animal Dmei Saorim, because it's healthier for them. It's more nutritious for spot to eat, you know, dmei sorin. And then, Rei Rashi understands the sugya, it sounds like our people, you know, if they can get a sale price on dmei sorin, you know, then they'll buy dmei sorin because they want what's best for spot. Right? But they're not going to pay, you know, the full price for sorin, right? Vicious people, you know, who would spend more expensive, you know, food for their dog. But, so this is a very fascinating, I'll just throw out some questions just to tell you what they talk about, but I'm not going to go into it. Does it matter here, in either direction? Let's say this person never, ever would buy sorin. Okay? But sorin is still what the owner lost, and what is objectively more nutritious for the animal. Well, let's say in the other direction. Let's say this animal owner always buys dvei sorin, mishalem, the full price. Right? Would Rabba think he could still get away with dvei amir because it wasn't his decision here? And would Rava say that he only has to pay dvei sorin bezol? Let's say he pays top dollar all the time. Right? What I'm trying to show is that this can be complicated. I mean, try to figure out what, you know, there can be four or five, you know, different places to draw the line in terms of how you assess the benefits here. There's an objective question. I mean, what was eaten? What did the animal benefit from? What cheftza did it benefit from? Right? And related to that, what did the owner of the food, what did he lose? That's top dollar, possibly dmei sorin. Right? On the other extreme, you know, what's the minimum that the undeniable minimum that the owner of the animal, you know, benefited? That's dmei teva. But then the question is again, how much do we take into account, you know, the actual practices, the actual patterns of these owners? Right? Okay. So you can see already that this is a bit of a complicated question. There's also a debate among the Rishonim who we paskin like. The Rif mentions both Rabba and Rava. Now, those who think that that's his way of saying that there's a safek. The Rambam mentions both, doesn't say Rambam and Rava, doesn't mention that. Rambam, they're not going to mention that. But the Rambam says you pay either Dmei Sorim or Dmei, doesn't call it Dmei Tevin, he has another word for it, that's also part of the problem. No one can figure out what's going on in the Rambam. Shulta Gibar in a while. Peirush, very, very interesting topic. One, from one perspective, just getting to, you know, to what we're talking about before, again, I think there are two conceptually interesting questions here. One is, if you were to take a Masha Hizika perspective, as opposed to Masha Nana perspective, right, you could end up, you know, on the opposite side of this case, as I said. Meaning the owner of the food lost Sorim. Right? While you can make the case that the owner of the animal, you know, minimum benefit is Teva. And that's certainly something that you could argue. There's another point, and that is, how comfortable is the halacha with the din of Mishali Mashananis? Meaning, is that like an obvious default halacha which, you know, one can pursue aggressively? Or are we very defensive and inherently conservative-minded, you know, in applying that? In other words, there's no contractual, you know, relationship here. This just happened. So, you know, my animal ate this thing. I'm potter midine mazik. Okay, so now there's some other din. We're not quite sure the nature of that din. Right, either a rehabilitation of the mazik or some independent halacha that I'm mishali mashenetz. But let's say we were to take the view, instead of being, you know, convinced, you know, that there's a single value here that is very compelling on the high end or on the low end, Rabba or Rava, or the different views of the Rishonim within them, right? Let's say I were to acknowledge that there's more than one way to look at this value. Let's say I were to say, listen, from the perspective of the Chafza, it's this, and from the perspective of the Hefzed, of the owner of the food, it's this. From the perspective of the minimum, like I said before, you know, that is undeniably, you know, gained by the owner of the animal, it's that. Instead of saying that one of these is the Mechayiv, clearly, and therefore it is one to the exclusion of the others, let's say we're to take the posture and say, well, the Torah says Mishalem Mashanenis here, Halakha says Mishalem Mashanenis, and there are different ways to calculate Mashanenis, different legitimate ways to look at this problem. Then you might end up with a very interesting question, and that is, well, how do we really perceive this obligation of Mishalem Mashanenis to begin with? Right? Are we confident? I don't mean Safek and Vade, that's not what I'm saying. Are we, you know, do we look at this obligation in an assertive way? Are we comfortable with this notion? In other words, it's obvious, it's like Mamoni Gabach, I mean, you know. Or do we see this as kind of a gift, you know, to the loser here, meaning the poor guy who owned the food, you know, he's out $100. So it's just yosher. It's just not right, you know, that at least 30 of it shouldn't go back to him, Mishalem Mashanenis. But if you look at it that way, if you look at the assertive way and you say, oh, I mean, he's entitled to this, right? Then you're going to pay the higher value. But if you look at it as, you know, Nebuch, you know, he's a victim, and the Torah gave him a chesed, you know, it shouldn't be zenene, you know, v'zechaser, you know, then we probably can only justify the minimum, assuming that there's more than one way to look at. So this is a very interesting question. Okay. The next part of the sugya, and again, you have to pursue the details of it, and I'm not going to do that right now. So then the Gemara basically transitions from this interesting discussion of the Ptur Breshus HaRabim and the Chiyuv of Mishalei Mashanenis. The Gemara transitions into a much broader and, you know, very famous theme. And that is the theme of Zenene, the Zelo Chaser, more broadly. So the Gemara introduces it with the following little anecdote. The Gemara says, before we get to, let me just talk about the Chitim for a minute. So the Gemara says, Tani Kavase Durava, Duraba, Tani Kavase Durava. Tani Kavase Duraba, who said you only pay Teven, Rab Shimon Yochayomer, Ein Mishalem, and Salad Deme Amir Bilba. Tani Kavase Durava, Imnenes Mishalemes Mashanemes Ketzad Ochel Kava Kavayim Ein Omrim Tishalim Demeim. You don't pay them a full amount. El Omdim Kam Adam Rotzal Achil Behemta Dover Aroyla Avo Bishena Rogil. Again, he doesn't usually buy champagne dog food, you know. But how much would he spend, you know, to get higher quality, you know, food for his animal in this case? Very interesting. The Kavu Kabayim is subject to a massive discussion in the Rishonim, Girs of Rashi, and other things. Let's say, for example, the animal here eats not only beyond his qualitative class, you know, typically they give him, biscuits, and all of a sudden, you know, he's eating steak, you know, assuming it's good for him. Let's say it's also the quantity. Does it make a difference? Let's say you, or maybe even typically, or maybe even in terms of his benefit, you know, you give the animal a kav, you know, for lunch. An amount, I'm talking about. And let's say the animal here eats kabayim. That's an interesting question. And then it's Siv and others discuss what if it's more destructive. Is there a difference between, in either direction, between qualitative and quantitative discrepancies, either in terms of what's good for the animal, what's better for the animal, And what's not typical for this owner slash animal's dietary, norm. Okay, so these are interesting questions. Good. Then finally, the Gemara says, "Lefikach achla chitin or davar harela ptura." But if the animal ate chitim, apparently it's not good for the animal, or some other davara, even though it consumed something, right? That you don't pay. Not mashizik, of course. Not even mashanenis, because there is no mashanenis. What about achila gasa? Right? So Tziv and others speak about that as well. Interesting quote. Okay. Then the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Chizkiya Rami Bar Chama." So Rav Chizkiya turned to Rami. I'm sorry. Rav Chizkiya turned to Rami Bar Chama, and he said to him, "Lo havis gabon beurta." Right? Last night you weren't with us. Bitchuma at the tchum, the boilan mila ma'al yasa, where we were discussing. We're raising this question of an interesting case. Right? Omar Mai Mila Mal Yasa, he piqued his curiosity, so he bit. He said, what was the intriguing discussion that you had? So Amalei said to him, Hador Bechatz Chaveru Shalomi Daito, if a person takes, he basically squats on somebody else's property without permission, Torah Kalhalas Loskar, O Ein Sarech, is he obligated to pay him, for the equivalent of the rent of the time that he's there, if he squats on his property? So the Gemara says, Eichadami, what's the case? Ilei mebechotze de lo kai miliagra, the gabra de lo oved lemegar. If the case is one in which this person who owns the chotzer typically does not rent it out, right? That he doesn't have the expectation of an income from this property. The gavra, the law of the lemegar, and the person who's living there also, he has other options, right? The option is not that he's going to have to write a check, and go into the local motel. Okay, he's got other options. He has other properties. He has other friends. He has people. Whatever it is. So it says the Gemara, ze lo nene, ze lo chaser. So that's a case where ze lo nene, meaning the dar, the squatter, doesn't benefit, because either way, he wouldn't be shelling out any rent money because he has options. It's interesting, right? We'll see in a moment. But the other fellow, the owner of the property, is lo chaser because he doesn't, derive income from this property. So simple that if it's zeh lo nene v'zeh lo chaser, that there should be no payment. And again, there's still no permission, right? So I don't think it's so simple. At the end of the day, you're still living in somebody's property, without permission. Okay, how much would you pay? How would you assess it? But it's nothing. Okay, sounds like it. We'll see. So the Gemara says, okay, that is not the case. Ella b'chotze d'kaim eliagra v'gavr d'avr l'megar. So they go to the other extreme. Maybe we're talking about a case of a property that is used for income, as he rents out this property. And this person also, if he didn't squat on your property, he'd be paying to stay in somebody else's property. Says the Gemara, that zenene v'zechaser. That's a situation where, the beneficiary benefits and the other guy loses. That's called zenene v'zechaser. That the Gemara thinks at this moment, zenene v'zechaser, you should be chayiv. Okay? Says the Gemara, lo tzricha v'chaser delo kaim ela agra v'gaber da avad lemegar. What about a situation where you have a nene, right, but not a chaser? Because again, the owner doesn't use the property for income, but the squatter, right, is saving motel money. So that's called ze nene, right, v'ze lo chaser. So the Gemara says, What's the halacha? Well, this is what they were discussing. Motzi omele mai chasartich. Can the squatter turn to the owner and say to him, listen, what do you want from me? No harm done. Right? You didn't lose anything. You weren't going to rent the property anyway. And consequently, you know, why should I pay you? Why do you forgin me, you know, the benefit that I had, basically? Oh, Odilma, or Matzi Amar, can the owner say to the squatter, Ha'ishanis, you benefited from my property. It's irrelevant, right, that I didn't lose, because I had no intention of using it for income purposes. In the end of the day, you saved $100, right, by squatting on my property, and that $100 should be turned over to me. That's the something. Okay, this is what we generally call zenene, typically, zenene, the zelochaser. Of course, you can see already, immediately, that there's a missing case. Right? Because the Gemara analyzes zelonene, the zelochaser. I think that's Davar Pashut, that there's no payment in that. Okay. They think zenene vizechaser, there is payment. Right? And they're mistapek about zenene vizelochaser. What happens to the missing case? Ze chaser, ze lo nene, meaning this guy has, he could put his head on pillow, you know, anywhere. So we don't consider it that he's nene, right? But the other fellow is chaser because he rents out the property. So he lost income. Or he has a kapeda for this income. Might be different things. But whatever. So that is a question. That's a debate among the Rishonim. Just to show you very quickly, Tosas here on the bottom of Chaf Amud Aleph, Ze nene veze in chaser hu, Afila b'chotza d'kaim eliagra, says even if the case is one of a chotza d'kaim eliagra, a property that is typically a source of income, meaning it's chaser, the gavra de lo eved le megar, and an individual who doesn't pay for his lodging, meaning ze lo nene veze chaser. Nonetheless, says Tosis, have a matzah le megar de potter. They have two is potter. Kivin shelo nene, as long as he is not nene, he's potter, even though he's mechaser the other fellow. Why isn't that mazik? This is not Shane versus Aravim here. Right? The answer is Afa Pisha Garam Hefsa the Chavero, he's still potter. Why? Tafilu Girsho Chavero mi beso, the Noel Delis Bifanav, Ainzel Grama Bialma. If he were to chase somebody out of his home, right, and lock the door and throw away the key so that the homeowner now could not benefit from his own property, says Tosis, that would not be actionable in court. Because that's called grumma. Right? That's not called mazik. Because what he does is he is responsible for the other fellow not benefiting from his own property. Right? But in a causal, indirect way. Ah. So if you look at the Gra, see how goes Hagra? It says near Bene Avalarif Bishar Poskim Kos with the Kaigabna Chayev Va'ayin Rosh. Okay? So if you look at the Rif and the Rosh and the Nebuke Yosef, okay, if you look at the Rosh for a second, I think it's so Simon. I think it's base above. Okay. Because we have the Rosh in the back. Yeah. Yeah. Here. If you look at Simon Vav, Ilay mebechatzah d'alokayim b'liagra v'gav d'lov v'lemegar zelo nenev zelo chaser hu pirsh ri du'a dinam mebechatzah d'alokayim b'liagra v'gav d'lov v'lemegar the potter. But if you have ze chaser v'zelo nene, you're a potter like Artosis. Kiven d'lo nene, right? Afal pi shegarim hefsa d'chaveiro, you know, he caused the other fellow a loss. Tafilu girish chaveiro mebeisav and all d'alos b'fanav ein ze elegrama Bialma v'lo melchayev elikashas hagzela v'chena makabel sade v'chuvira ein chayev elimshim right to darshina and lashon hedge. Fine. V'omer b'Yerushalmi zos emeres amavat al kisa shal chaveiro potter. Rav Alfas kasav. However, the Rif writes avuchatzah d'kayim b'liagra tzorech lahalas lo schar afal gav d'lo ovid l'megar d'chasre mamona. The Rif disagrees with this read. The Rif says that if it's chaser, ze chaser v'ze lo nene, that you are chayiv l'halos lo schar. You have to pay. U'kedvar muchach mishmaitin, says the Rosh, I agree with the Rif. Sholchua beirav ami omar v'chima osaze mach chisro u'maziko mash mach chisro v'ziko pshita shechayiv. Right, the Gemara says he's the expression, right, mach chisro, what did he... It sounds like if he was mechaser him, then he would have to pay. Miu kvaru chachti shal kisor nein chayiv lohava elegrama bialma v'ike lechiyuve mehaitayma ike lechiyuve. Normally, he says, I agree with Tosis that if somebody chased somebody out of their property, or at least somebody locked somebody else's property, you lock somebody out of their property and you don't let them in. So you can't benefit from it. Says the Rush, I agree with Tosis that that is, of course, not a good thing, but it's also not actionable. That's a grub, right? Because you're indirectly responsible for his inability. You're preventing him from using his property, but in an indirect fashion. But, he says, if somebody lives in the property and his presence there constitutes a chaser, that's not called grubba. Mishum she'ochal chisrono shel zeh. That's called a more direct. He is benefiting. It's one thing if I prevent him from coming into his own property. But if I'm in his property and I'm benefiting from it, that is the equivalent of ochal chisrono shel zeh. Very fascinating. Because then again, at the end of the day, it's not so obvious. Obviously, Tosa thinks it's incorrect. What do you mean, ochal chisrono shel zeh? Right? It's zeh chaser v'zeh lo nene. Right? But it's still ochal chisrono shel zeh. He's still living there. Meaning he thinks that because it takes the form of living there, and in some iterations that could be a hana, even though in this particular one it happens technically not to be, that constitutes a different chalos. There are two ways to prevent somebody from using their property. One is if I lock them out of it, and the other is if I'm there and I usurp their presence. Usurping their presence, what Bali Tosis think is, usurping the presence of the owner is just another technical way of saying, but what's important about it is that you're preventing them from using their property. And the Rif, or the Rush, or this whole group of Rishonim are suggesting that the fact that he is usurping the other fellow is a more direct, that he's substituting for him, in other words, that's not grama. That's called ochal chisrono shelzeh. Even if it's ein zeh nene, it's still called ochal chisrono shelzeh. Fascinating. V'lo dami l'no beso shel chaveiro, v'lo darbo, it's not comparable to when he's preventing him, meaning Shimon doesn't allow Reuven into Reuven's own property, but Shimon isn't living there either. Right? Or a movir sada shel chaveiro. Right? Shelo ba liado klum michisaron chaveiro. He doesn't get anything from it. Aval ze afal gav shelo nene, he could get Another, again, this is the point I'm trying to make. He doesn't think it's only because physically he's present. He's saying since he is physically present, that's called Ochel Kisrono Shalzeh, even though he's lo nene because he might have been nene. It's just a technicality that he's not nene. That's what he means. Apel gav shelo nene, sheyimotzi dir acheres bechina, mikomokom hashtamia ka'ochal mashachaveiro nifsad. Right? It's not just that he causes the loss, he's ochal masha nifsad. That makes it not a grama, but a mazik. So you're not chai b'toras ana, you're chai b'toras hefsad. It's fascinating. But okay. You wonder whether or not the view or the possibility that your chayiv and your zenenev is a lo chaser isn't also kind of a hefsed. Even though there's no actual hefsed, but it's a different... In a way, it's parallel to this case. Okay. So that is, if you look at the Nebuke Yosef, again, you'll see the same debate, a different formulation, a little bit, but the same idea that we paskin like the Rif and not like the Bali Tosis, that ze chaser, the ze lo nene, should be chayiv, not pot. Okay, let's get back to the Gemara. So the Gemara says here, we're back to Kofun Beis. So it's fascinating, just in light of what we began with. I'll have to stop in a minute. The Gemara says, Amalei Masnisani. So, again, what happened here was, what is it, Rami Bar Chama? Who was it? Rav Chizkiah said to Rami Bar Chama, you know, it's really unfortunate that you weren't here when they had this scintillating, you know, halachic discussion. Okay? So, Rami Bar Chama said to him, I don't know about the eh part. But he said to him, like, you know, it's a, like, this was your scintillating discussion. It's a Mishnah. Right? That's pretty deflating. So he said, Amalei Masnisan, he says, so he said to him, Hey Masnisan. Like, you know what? You know, we spent 4 hours last night. You know, which Mishnah? So he said, Amalei, this is again a puzzling little line in the Gemara, but you know, Milsa de B'dichusa, presumably. He said, L'chita Shamishli. You know, first do something for me, you know, then I'll reveal which Mishnah, you know, it was. They were having a good time with each other. So then the Gemara says, Shokal Sudre, you know, Karachle. I think he folded up his napkin or something, or his Sudar. And so he said, okay, fine, so which Mishnah? So he said, Amalei Imnenis Mishalemis Mashanenis. The Mishnah in Bava Kama. Meaning, Ze Nene, right? Veze Lo Koser. What's a din? He answers, "Your chayiv l'shalei mashenenis." We see it from the Mishnah in Bava Kama. What? Is that what the Mishnah says? What's the case of the Mishnah? You have Shein and Regel, Rishus Harabim. So that's zen nene v'zel lo chaser. That's lo chaser, right? The guy loses $100. Said it's Potter Mishum Shein Varegel, Rishus HaRabin. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava, Kama Lo Choli Velo Margish Gavr De Marisaya. Okay, that's what he's saying. The Alpha Gav Lo Domi Lo Masnisen. So this guy, you know, has good Siyata Deshmaya on his side, because even though it's a very poor, this is him talking, right? This is Rava talking. Rav said, even though that's a very poor Raya, it happens to be that the psak is still correct. Afagav the lo dami lemasnisen, kabbalah kibla mine, haizen nene v'zeh chaser, v'haizen nene v'zeh lo chaser. Why is it a terrible riot for the Mishnah? Because of what they're really discussing is what the status of zeh nene v'zeh lo chaser is. But the Mishnah is a case of zeh nene v'zeh chaser, because the owner of the food, Rishus HaRabim, is out $100. That's not Zenene V'Zelo Chaser, is it? Ah. But, getting back to our original point a little bit, right? On another level, it's true he's out $100, but there is something about this Mishnah, a little bit, That is, that the $100 that he's out is legally not actionable. Because shein v'regler patur b'shus harabin. So if something is patur halachically, is that the equivalent of being lo chaser or chaser? But again, his bank account is depleted by this action by $100. That's chaser. But he can't take him to court and recover the loss because shein v'regler b'shus harabin. That's lo chaser. But the Gemara doesn't say this, or does it? So the Gemara says, for Rami Bar Chama, what, Rami Bar Chama gave such a poor raya? Right? Like, what is he thinking? He didn't realize the Mishnah is a case of chaser. Says the Gemara, Rami Bar Chama, stam peros b'shus harabim, afkure mafkir lehu. Since the owner puts food in b'shus harabim, it's like hefker. So it's zeneneve, it's zelo chaser. Very strange. Says Tosas, afkure mafkir lehu. If it was really afkure mafkir lehu, he'd pay zenene. If I'm mafkir peros and rishus harabim, then somebody comes along and eats it. You don't pay mashenene. Aside from which, whoever said that the peros rishus harabim, you know, are considered hefker. Look at Tosas, the little Tosas. Tosas says, "Afkure mafkiluhu." Right? Lo legamri. Don't take it literally. The imkain afilu mashanen is lo mashalim. There's something wrong with this formulation. Ella, but Tosas tries to at least preserve part of it. Tosas, Ella nisyaish mehem. Right, shesavur sheiskalkalu machnas sherabim dorsim aleim. I mean, he's not mafkir because otherwise it wouldn't be mishalim mashenenis, but it's not completely chaser either because, you know, he doesn't have high hopes that he's going to get this tvua back. Right, ad shalayavo l'dmei mashenenis. Right, meaning he. Tosus has a clever way, an ingenious, meaning he's kind of mochel, you know, on the beyond mashenenes, because he knows it's very likely, you know, that somebody, some animal is going to eat it. That's what it means, afkure mafkiru. Or, is it possible that what Rami Bar Chama was really saying was what we were saying before? And that is, that this isn't considered chaser because shein v'regler b'shus harabim is not actionable. That's what we mean. But then it goes back to the question, so why when you're mishali mashananis, you're paying some new chiyuv? Or you're paying, you know, the nezek equivalent of the hana? Right, the mafkir who isn't really hefker, the mafkir who is the svara, according to what I'm suggesting, of shein v'regel being patur b'shus harabim. Right, I mean you took your food, you left food in b'shus harabim, and he has a right to walk in b'shus harabim. You know, what were you thinking? It's not real hefker, you know, but it's not exeris hakasuv legamri either. It's not actionable in court for very understandable reasons. So, how do you assess that? That's mashenene, mashenene, vizelo chaser, or is that chaser? Okay. So, this is the question that is put. We have to stop in a minute. So, let me just raise the question a little bit further. So, really, the issue, just obviously, the rent case, not a case of mazik on the surface, right? Okay, so the Mishnah is a case of mazik with a patur shein v'regel b'shus harabim. But the case of the renting, nothing to do with mazik. The next case, I'll just show you just for a second, the sugyan bava basra in the first parak, hamakiv chavero, the Gemara says as follows, hamakiv chavero migimol ruchosa, the godars are rishonas hashniyah v'sashlishis, So you have these people, they have adjacent property. One guy's on the, according to most Rishonim, one guy's on the inside, right, and the other fellow owns properties around him on the outside. You can see the picture on the in the Rashi. So the guy on the outside, call him Shimon, Reuven is the interior owner, and Shimon is the exterior owner, let's say. So Shimon builds fences in three of the boundaries, three of the borders. Okay? Oh. So the question is Reuven, the interior guy, obligated to share the expenses of that or not? So what they say is, Ein mechayvin oso, he doesn't have to contribute, but the implication is, horavius, but if Shimon built a fourth wall, which then fully encloses Reuven's interior property, right, benefiting him, until that point, there's no benefit. You know, it's just three quarters. The land is still vulnerable, it's still open. But if he closes off all four, right, horavius, mechayvin oso, he should have to pay for all four. Not all of it, but he should have to share in payment. Shma mina zenen. The outside guy has to build walls anyway, from his point of view. Right? But shma mina zenen, v'zeh lo chaser, chayiv. Says the Gemara, shani hasam, da amalei, ad garantli hekefa yisayri. And the guy says, no, who says that zenen, v'zeh lo chaser? Maybe it's chaser because the very presence of the interior property, right, is what determines, right, that he has to make walls on that part of it. Otherwise, he could have just, you know, had much easier, you know, fencing options. Now, it's fascinating because till now, previously, the chaser cases are active chasers. Shein v'regel b'shus harabim. I mean, the animal eats something. That's chaser. The question is, chaser or not? But the animal, does a kumba say, or the dor, right? Dor b'chatzah shachaver shalom idaito. So the interloper, the squatter, you know, he takes the initiative and he invades somebody's property. Here you're talking about makif and anika. Two people legitimately own property. He exists. And his property exists. That's called chaser. Didn't think so to begin with, and now it does. Either way, the point I'm trying to make, and I'll get back to this next time when we continue, we'll try to get to the end of the sugya and to make some other comments about this. I'll just tell you what we're setting up, is the following. So we applied this halacha nezek, we applied this halacha in schiros batim, we applied this halacha in shkenim, the dinim of shkenim, and in a bunch of other cases as well. And the question in all cases is this question. Meaning, what is there really a chiyuv min haTorah, even without a contractual understanding of any sort, that if Shimon derives benefit from Reuven, then he has to pay him for it? Is that really a din? And if so, as I said, is that because of what we call mamoni gabach? Meaning it's like, well, that comes from me, and therefore you owe me. Even though there's no contractual obligation, it kind of came about agav, but still, if it stems from me, then you owe me. Is there really such a halacha? Or are these all cases where there is another kind of layer, just like there was mazik in the Mishnah, maybe there's schiras makom, and there's gezel, and there's all sorts of other cases and other cases, where what we're really doing is expanding another obligation. This guy built a fence. So instead of thinking, oh, he built a fence for himself, the other guy is deriving a $200 profit, you know, agav, and you know, that should not be ignored. The other way to say it is, you know, the fence was built, and since the other fellow benefits from it, so maybe all he did, that expands the whole area of Skiras Polim. Turns out that when he built this fence, he built it for himself, and he also built it as I was never contracted as a poel. The answer is Mishale Mashanen, Ligabe the Hana, that's like the equivalent of a working operation. In which case, you always have to do that. That's the question. Or another way to put it, we'll say if you hold the zenene, the zelo chaser is potter. Right? Let me say this one. If you hold zenene, the zelo chaser is chayiv, you have to explain why. And that's the question I just asked. Right? Is it because of this idea that, you know, any time I benefit my neighbor, you know, I can send him a check, he has to send me a check, you know, I have rights? Or is it connected to some other categories? If you go the other way, and you say Zen Nenev Zelo Chaser is Patur, that's also very intriguing. I mean, a guy squats in your property, right, he saves $100, and because it's not Chaser, he doesn't have to pay you? Why not? So some Rishonim think that that is based on the principle of Kofin al, if you look at Tos on the top here, Kofin al Midas Do. Mishnah Masechet Avos, you know, has this idea, the Gemara in Bava Basra and elsewhere talks about Kofin al Midas Stone. The Mishnah just talks about the Mida of stone. Right? Shali, you know, Shali, Shalcha, Shalcha. Is it a Mida Ben Onis or is it Mida Stone? Fascinating question. A question about property and capitalism and social, and all these kind of questions in a way, if you understand them in a certain way. So, is that the idea that really, if you benefit from my, you know, from my property, I should always be able to charge you, right? But if it's a nenev, it's a lo chaser. So there's another principle, and that's the chiyuv chesed, call it, or the rikuk from midas tov. Is that what's going on, or is it something more fundamental? What is it that the chaser contributes to the nenev? Again, so in Zen Nenev is a lo chaser, right? If you say it's midas stone, you could say, well, Zen Nenev is a chaser. That's davar pasha. There's no midas stone there, right? You can't expect somebody to extend the benefits to someone else when he loses. How big does a loss need to be? Let's say it's less than a pruta. Put it this way: in a case of Zen Nenev is a chaser, let's say it's a chisaron purta, a very small loss. Right, more than a pruta, but it's $10 chisar and $100 hana. Right, what do you pay the 100 or you pay the 10? Does it matter if the person thought he was going to pay and then it turns out, you know, let's say he thought he was the property of a person who was makbid, who for whom it was chaser, and it turns out that it wasn't chaser. Because it wasn't Reuven's property, it was Shimon, and Shimon doesn't rent his property out. Does that make a difference? So these are some of the questions we'll discuss next time, but they really go to the heart of a bigger question, and that is, A, is there a halacha that you just pay for a na, A? And B, are there different types, are there conditions that dictate the quality, I don't mean the quality, well, the quality of a hana, which is subject, right, to value and therefore to payment. Does the fact that it's a hana which came about at the expense of somebody else's bank account, does that somehow, you know, change the equation? Does that somehow redefine how we look at this hana? So that's the issue that we'll try to analyze next time. Okay.